You're listening to the Lawyer Lifestyle Podcast with Chicago attorney Dave Scriven Young.
It's Tuesday, so it means another Legal Power Players episode. Every Tuesday, I try to bring you an interview with someone who's in power in the legal industry or someone whose superpower is in marketing, sales, and leadership. Today, I'm excited to have Mark Cerniglia as a guest on the show. Mark is a founding partner at Spotlight Branding. He's passionate about helping professionals understand the truths and myths about internet marketing and educating them on how to get the most out of their marketing efforts. He's a proud graduate of the University of Central Florida, where he earned his master's degree in business and marketing. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, so glad to be here. Thank you.
Hey, so, you know, I'm a big Disney fan, so tell me a little bit about your experience at the University of Central Florida as a Midwesterner who always dreamed of, you know, working at Disney and living down there. Tell me a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that is, you know, people hear, oh, you grew up in Orlando. Did you go to, you know, Disney World all the time? And I'm like, absolutely. No, I mean, we did and we didn't. You know, I think that it's one of those things where we went to Disney, went to Universal, and that stuff will always have a special place in my heart because it's very cool to grow up near those things. But it's also one of those things where when it's in your backyard, I wouldn't say it gets old, but like it's you're not going to do it as often as you might think you would do it if you lived there. But no, it was really neat. You know, I was even a valet at one of the Disney hotels for a while. You know, and so it's absolutely neat to be part of that culture. And, you know, not only Disney, but Universal, they brought so much to the Orlando economy and that type of thing. So, no, it was definitely neat growing up around that.
Yeah. So, and I've been following what's been happening sort of with the coronavirus and Disney reopening. I know some of the DVC resorts are open now. So, yeah, it's always fascinating to me to get the perspective of a local, because I understand how that magic can be lost at times.
Totally. You know, and it's interesting. I mean, it's not what the episode's about, but I will tell you, you know, a lot of people criticize Disney and how expensive everything is. And yeah, you know, listen, I'll be the first to admit they're pricey, but what I can tell you from actually working there, just, I mean, at least the, you know, the people, the managers I spoke with and the culture of the places I work, they really do care about creating like a magical experience for their guests. So there is an authenticity there, I promise. but I'll totally admit it's expensive to get that authenticity sometimes, but I can tell you that it's real though. Like they really care about, you know, creating that experience for people.
Well, let's turn the page then and talk about the magical experience you might get at Spotlight Branding. So I'm curious about the journey. I know you're a founding partner, and I'm curious about the journey of the company's creation and why you started Spotlight Branding.
Sure. Yeah. So for those that don't know, Spotlight Branding is a content marketing company specifically for law firms. We tend to focus on solo and small law firms, but law firms as a whole for sure. Started the company about 8 years ago. I was dating a girl in Miami. I moved down there for her. She later became my wife. So that decision worked out. But I also met my eventual business partner in Miami that I started this company with. So I really owe Miami a lot as well. Got my wife there and my business. and so, you know, we started about 8 years ago. And, you know, over the years, we've even evolved. You know, we, to be very honest, we set out to try to do all the marketing we could. And I think we quickly learned what a lot of lawyers learn is that you can't be an expert at everything. And over the years, we really saw that content marketing was something that wasn't really being either done or wasn't being done well, or was maybe being done with the wrong reasons or with the wrong focus. And we saw a lot of lawyers wasting their money on the wrong marketing or doing marketing the wrong way. And so over the years, we've really tried to become the company that, you know, to be very frank, that, you know, we think we know what type of content marketing works. We think we know how it fits into the rest of the marketing picture for most law firms. And so we've been focusing on that. And, you know, we're headquartered in Charlotte, North Carolina, but we've got clients nationwide. And it's been a blast. And we love working with lawyers because, you know, the large majority of them are great people doing great things, bringing justice And so, you know, it's really great to do marketing the right way and to work with great people.
Well, let's define our terms a little bit, because I think people get a little bit confused about what exactly content marketing is. I mean, you hear a lot about websites and blogs and all sorts of things. So when you talk about content marketing, can you just tell our listeners a little bit what you mean by that?
Sure. So, yeah, I think, I mean, typically when you think of content, I think the written word comes to mind first, and that's certainly included. So it's going to be things like blogs. But it's going to be every social media post is a piece of content. Video is content. Creating a podcast is content. You know, creating a free resource is content. I mean, heck, even putting testimonials on your website is a form of content. So, you know, content is a lot of things, but, you know, but what content isn't in and of itself is content isn't an advertising campaign. You know, content isn't an ad on Google. That ad might take someone to a piece of content. It might take them to a blog. It might take them to a video. You know, but typically this in the simplest forms, and this is kind of what we focus on, content is going to be blogs, social media, videos, email. Email's content as well. We do email newsletters. You know, but then you can build from there, like a podcast and stuff like that. We don't produce podcasts for our clients, but that's a great form of content, as you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, the perspective that I come from, Mark, is one of a associate or of counsel at a law firm, at a mid-sized or larger law firm who, you know, my perspective is quite different from perhaps a solo or small firm attorney who has a marketing budget as a result of being able to take profits out of their own business. So I'm not, you know, a business owner per se, although I like to think of myself as a business person, because of course, you know, one of my responsibilities is bringing in clients as well as obviously doing the legal work that's involved in taking on the case. So my question for you is, in terms of somebody who's in that position who may not necessarily have a marketing budget or has a, you know, a budget to, you know, join maybe one bar association, what are some of the tactics or some of the things if someone wanted to get started in content marketing that they might do?
Right. That's a great question. So I would say start with the end in mind first. And my suggestion for what the end goal should be is two things. If you're an associate or an of counsel, is number one, I think you're trying to kind of build your own reputation, right? And kind of build, you know, kind of raise your profile. And number two is to kind of increase your book of business. And, you know, typically an associate, you know, they have a book of business, they're kind of their own rainmaker, so to speak. And so, you know, trying to really maximize your network, I think would be really big, you know, and that's actually why I think content is a great solution, because it's going to be even more challenging to run your own, say, advertising campaign. Not that you can't, right? But I'd rather see, like, if you're an associate, I'd rather see you start a blog. So you asked for some tactics, right? I'd rather see you start a blog, which David, I know you can speak to here in a second. I'd rather see you send an email newsletter to your network to stay in touch with them, you know, then I'd like to see you run a pay-per-click campaign as an associate. And the reason I like those simple examples like a blog and a newsletter is because you're doing two things. You're raising your profile and your brand. You're creating content that kind of solidifies you as the expert in your practice areas. And then you're also, you know, that content's being created for your existing network, right? So you're going to get even more referrals because you're staying in touch with them. And that's always going to be the most important thing, I think, for an associate is your book of business and your network and constantly staying in touch with them.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that I've seen, and even I've made sort of these mistakes in the past, is developing an asset like a blog, but then not connecting that to, as you said, your network. So you may, you know, publish a lot of articles, you may do a lot of things, but no one may be necessarily seeing them because perhaps you're not sending them out to folks that you know, your contacts in a newsletter and that sort of thing. So if you could speak to that a little bit, that would be great.
Yeah. So listen, if you're listening to this episode, I'd like you to really lean in for this next part because this is so important. Do not judge the success of any of your content marketing by the amount of views it gets or the amount of traffic it gets. I actually believe that your number one reason for creating content should be your existing network. So for example, David, to your point, if you create a blog with the hope being that your blog creates web traffic, that new people find you through the internet, I'm not saying that can't happen. As a matter of fact, I know for you, it has to some degree, but it is sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But here's what works 100% of the time is using your blog and or other pieces of content to educate and stay in touch with your existing network. There's no failure in that. It works 100% of the time. You know, and so if you can go out and then have people find you on the internet because of your content, then that's icing on the cake. But it is a fact that you will get more referrals, that you will get more of the kind of business you want, and that frankly, you might even be able to command higher rates when you stay in touch with your existing network more frequently and educate them. So whether it's a newsletter, whether it's a social media presence, whether it's a blog, if your number one goal is your existing network, you will always succeed and you'll actually find that you're leaving business on the table because you're not staying in touch with them enough. You know, and I think we have that backwards, right? We're focused on our blog traffic and stuff like that instead.
No, I think that those are great tips. And I guess, you know, the next logical question is, how do you figure out who to send content to? Because as you might know, you know, I have three different practice areas. I practice, you know, environmental law, which I actually have a blog. It's the Illinois Environmental Law blog. I also do have some construction experience. So I practice construction law and I also practice commercial litigation. So it seems as though those are three sort of, you know, they could be seen as vastly different. And then of course, you know, I have other contacts on my list that may not be interested in maybe any of those subjects. So I'm curious as to, you know, if you would recommend sort of segmenting the list or differentiating what content you're sending out or any other, what other tactics you might think about there.
If you're not doing any of it yet, I would always start with the easiest path, which I think is send everything to everyone. I think oftentimes you'll be surprised how many people are not only totally fine receiving content that might not be specific to them, but oftentimes it's actually helpful because they know someone that it might help. Or, you know, now you're educating them on what you do, right? I've always kind of joked that I think one of the worst phrases a lawyer can hear is, "I didn't know you do that." You know, so, but look, the flip side is, I'll be honest, as a branding company, we also like to see our clients niche down, right? I always say, if you need a heart surgery, right, you're looking for a doctor that specializes in heart surgery, right? You're not, you know, so I think that over time, if there's an opportunity to get more focused with your messaging and segment your audience, you could look at that, but there's really two reasons I wouldn't start there. One, because it's the more complicated thing, and I think it's better to get it started and then make it better. But number two, and you and I, David, we talked about this a little bit offline, but when you start with everyone and including everyone, you create a baseline of kind of results. And so then when you start to segment, if you start to segment, you now can actually see if the segmentation is working better or worse potentially. Because when you're deciding for somebody else what kind of content they should get from you, you're also deciding that they might not know someone who needs something else that you do. So it's a double-edged sword, you know, because you also, I think, want to be seen by an expert in just one thing if you can. But I say get it started, see how it goes, and then improve from there.
Well, I think what's really key from what you said is to start.
Right.
And that perhaps is the hardest thing, especially for lawyers who are apt to be perfectionist, type A personalities, who, you know, have so many fears about, oh, what is this person going to think of me? And, you know, there are all these, you know, ethical rules around advertising, and I want to make sure I'm, you know, within those rules. And it's so easier not to do anything than it is to sort of, you know, as a lawyer, wrap your brain around that. So I think getting into the mindset of actually starting and picking one thing, whether it's a blog or a podcast or whatever, and then distributing that, just getting that started, to me is very key.
There's three things that have proven true to me over the almost decade I've had Spotlight Branding about what you just said. One, you are always going to be the worst critic of your content and your marketing that goes out. Two, the only people that criticize it are going to be the ones that aren't doing any of it themselves. And three, a lot of times it's the people that you think weren't going to be interested in it that end up really appreciating that you put the content out, and then end up having a referral or some sort of person they want to introduce you to. You know, I just see those three things play out all the time.
Yeah. On that third point, it's interesting. I found that so true in my experience. So I do a weekly video show, as you know, listeners of this podcast know. It's called the Lawyer's Emotional Intelligence Book Club. So we talk about emotional intelligence skills. And right now we're talking about, we're going through a book that deals with stress. And even though we sort of bring a very lawyer-focused discussion on that video show, we do get quite a bit of non-lawyers who, you know, come in and listen. So it's very true. Even if, you know, you think that your topic may not be interesting to others, it's funny how many other people actually join the discussion and want to learn.
Oh, I always, you know, I always used to joke, and I guess in some ways, I don't know if it's really a joke anymore, but like I always should say to our clients, I always should say, you know, don't discriminate. And what I meant by that then, that's an interesting word right now in July 2020 with everything that's going on, and rightfully so, there's a lot that needs to be addressed there. But what I always meant somewhat facetiously before is don't decide for somebody else whether or not they should be getting your content from you. Let them decide. It's really that simple.
Yeah. And not listening to haters, right?
Oh, yeah. They're almost always never doing any of it themselves.
Yeah. One of my favorite, you know, motivational speakers, marketing type folks is Gary Vaynerchuk. And he always talks about, you know, how you basically have to, you know, tune out the haters. And, you know, he has an interesting perspective because, yes, tune them out and you're going to get them. But also, you know, he advocates actually responding to some of those comments. You know, early on in his books, you know, he always talks about how you have to respond to every comment. I'm not sure how true that is, frankly.
Well, because he's also trying to build an online audience.
Yeah.
So we should probably talk about the difference real quick. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Gary Vaynerchuk, who I'm a huge fan of too, you and I talked about him. He is trying to become he already is. He's a social media personality. So a big part of his equity is his followers. I think for the average law firm, especially if, or associate, whether we're marketing the law firm or the associate, I mean, yes, you are trying to build your personality, but I still think the best thing you can do is build your person-to-person network. And then use your content as a touch point with that network. If you can also become a social media personality and get thousands and thousands of followers, great. But that's probably like the goal is not the same. So a lot of Gary's advice still applies. Matter of fact, I would say 90% of it does. But honestly, most lawyers aren't going to get a ton of comments in the first place. you're just probably not because I don't know how to describe it. Like your stuff just isn't as interesting as like a Gary Vaynerchuk social media marketing guru. But what I can assure you is that people still read it or skim it. You know, they might not read the entire blog that talks about how their business can become more environmentally friendly, but they see that that's the content you write about, and you better believe it plants the seed in them that if they ever need more help with that, or they know someone that needs help with that, they're going to think of you. So I think the end result is a little bit different for you and some associates out there than it is for Gary V. Not completely, please don't misunderstand, but don't judge your internet content marketing the same way Gary does by followers and likes, because it's not the same thing in terms of the end result.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to what you said earlier about sort of, you know, what your goal is and how you're going to be using the content, which kind of brings me to a different topic, which is how you go about using your assets, if you will, and communicating that to your network. So, you know, we talked about, you know, if you have a blog and you want to get that to your contacts, and perhaps you're doing it in a newsletter, how do you go about that? Because I know, you know, yeah. Ben, you know, Gary talks a lot about, you know, having one pillar,
yes,
asset, and then, you know, going down from there and then, you know, distributing that. So how would you recommend that lawyers go about doing that?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked that. And I love that you brought up Gary Vee, because, you know, he calls it pillar. We call it spotlight branding. We call it content multiplication. And, you know, this, I told your audience to lean in close earlier. This would be the second thing to lean in on, because I told David before we started this, I said, look, I want to give your audience the secret sauce. I want to give you guys a, here's how you can do this yourself if you don't want to hire a company like mine. Content multiplication is your key to success. It's how you create a system where you can, at scale, put content out without creating a ton of work. And so for us, content multiplication is really simple. It's just constantly reusing content in multiple forms. So let me tell you exactly what we do at Spotlight Branding. We create a blog every month, and that gets published to the website. Then that blog becomes the feature article in the email newsletter. So to answer your question, how do you push that content out to your existing network? You start with email, right? And that email newsletter typically contains like an introduction, just kind of saying hello with any announcements, but it's an email, so you don't really need it to be that long. So you can have a one or two paragraph intro with announcements, then you can feature the blog from your website and you push send. Then that blog is also going to become social media posts, and you're going to post it multiple times, because when you post something once on social media, it's not like everybody sees it. So whether it's over the next few weeks or the next few months, you can use that one blog post as a social media post on, you know, as really as many times as you want. There really isn't a wrong number. I love when people ask Gary Vee, you know, how much content should I post? And there's no such thing. You know, if you're doing once a day, do twice a day. If you're doing 100 times a day, do 200, right? and then that formula I just shared kind of has a cycle to it. You know, I'm sitting here video chatting with David, and I'm drawing a circle with my fingers so you all can't see it. You know, but you know, once you publish the newsletter, depending on the platform you use, like we use MailChimp, that can create a link for like an HTML version of the email. And you then could use that HTML version as another social media post. You could have a newsletter sign up on your website that becomes another social media post. And then, you know, I mentioned blog, take video and put video through the same thing. You know, whether you have a video company do it or you use your cell phone, record some video FAQs, just some simple things where you answer common questions you get, and then do the same thing you did with blog. Publish those videos to your website, put them in your newsletter. Now your newsletter not only features a blog, but it features a video. How many newsletters have a video in them, right? Not many. Then those videos become social media posts. Same thing. You can post those unlimited amount of times, you know, and so forth. And now your video page on your website even becomes another thing you can promote on social media. You know, so right there, you could fill an entire week on social media, sharing your blog, sharing your video, sharing your newsletter, and sharing your newsletter sign up, and sharing your whole video page on your website. There's a whole week of social media.
Yeah, and what's fascinating from what I'm hearing you say is it doesn't take a lot for the initial, to create the initial asset. And the reason I say that is because I think so many people are overwhelmed just thinking about this because they think it's going to take so much time, so much effort. Oh, I have to write all these articles. I have to do all this stuff. But what I hear you saying is you don't need to actually write many of the, you know, initial assets. Like you don't have to write a daily blog post or something like that. You can write one and that becomes many different
Pieces. Here's what I would do. Start to write one blog and film one video a month, just one. And then get as much mileage out of those as you can. So mileage being put them in a newsletter. Create a newsletter template that you can reuse every month, okay, to make it easy. Put them in the newsletter, push send. Share those on social media multiple times. And then rinse and repeat next month. And you know, one of the things I want to mention too is that we do at Spotlight Branding is we create a social media formula. Literally, it's almost think of it as like empty slots. So slot one is the blog, slot two is the video, slot three might be a quote, just like a random quote because people love quotes. Slot four would be a third-party news article. So if you're a business attorney, maybe you share articles from Forbes, you know? And then slot five might be a link to any page on our website. Right? Every page on your website is a piece of social media content, right? One week we share, you know, hey, want to learn more about our team? Check out our about page. You know, the next week you could feature one of the attorneys at the firm. And if you're only doing this for yourself, then feature yourself. You know, the next week you might link to one of your practice area pages and say, you know, we have a really unique approach to environmental law. Learn more here. So all of the pages of your website, and then maybe your next slot on social media is a call to action. So want to learn more about blank? Here's our phone number. Want a free consultation today? Here's our contact form. And then do all those slots. You do each one of them like two or three times because you could post the blog three times. You could post the video three times. You could have two or three quotes, not just one. You could find two or three articles from third parties. And you can find two or three pages of your website to promote. And so it's like if you just create one blog and one video a month and then use your website to fuel more social media content. And you've got your newsletter, which basically just uses the blog and the video. You've got this amazing content system now with very little work. And that's literally what we do at Spotlight Branding. You know?
I mean, that's great. And I think the, you know, one of the resources that you talked about that I think associates and of counsel folks don't use enough is the firm's website. Where your firm has done, you know, an incredible job of putting this asset together. And, you know, you have a bio on your website. You have articles that you probably wrote that are on the website. Like, you know, my firm basically takes my blog post, my environmental blog post, and has created its own blog on its website. Yeah. And people can just you know, use that as an asset as well, in addition to, you know, maybe starting up your own stuff. So using your own firm's website is a great resource that I don't think tap into enough.
And just in case there's anyone out there that for some reason doesn't want to do that, and I understand that some people might have reasons, right? Like you're really trying to build your brand and your profile. Fine. You can still get a lot of mileage out of, you know, your blog. If you have your own, start a blog site, David. I'm sure you've talked about that in other episodes. If you haven't done it yet, I'm sure people would love an episode devoted to just how you started your blog, right? Like here's how to go do it in an hour. Right. Then you can have your own blog. And by the way, it's almost like a little mini website. Right. So if you wanted to create any extra pages there, you could. But your newsletter, remember, your newsletter becomes a social media post. You could publish your videos to YouTube if you didn't want to publish them to the firm's website for any reason. So you can still get a lot of mileage out of the other pieces of content, and you can still have a pretty robust social media presence even without the website. But to your point, it's just often that when the website is an option, we don't use it enough, you know?
Well, and let me ask you about one other thing, because I think one of the barriers that people have, I think, in their own minds to creating something like a blog is, you know, what will the law firm think in terms of, will there be a conflict between, you know, having the firm's website and then you have your own personal blog? You know, what do you give in terms of recommendations for, you know, how to deal with that conflict?
I wish I had a black and white answer. I don't. I think it just depends on your situation. I can tell you real quick some of the things to consider when you're making your decision. I think that it can be confusing if you're trying to promote multiple sites. I'm not saying you can't, just, you know, are you promoting David? Are you promoting the firm? You know, even the social media presence. Are you going to create some social media accounts around you, the lawyer, or the firm? Because a lot of people will want to have their own social media accounts be separate, and I think that's fine. But when you create your social media accounts for this, what are they? Is it a business? Is it you? You know, and usually a website is the central hub of kind of the online presence of a business or an entity or a brand, even if that brand is a person. So I think you just got to kind of think through the ecosystem. And, you know, if I'm going to have a blog and I'm going to have videos, where will those get published? You know, it's like when you hand out a business card to someone and it's got like five different websites on it, that's just confusing. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but at the same time, if you're really trying to reap all the benefits for yourself, that's understandable. And if you really want to build what you're building, like separate from the firm, like you control all of it, great, good for you, go for it. If you have every intention to be with that firm for a while and you don't mind sharing the wealth, then piggyback off of the fact that the firm already has a website and that website has content. And maybe your blogs are published there, maybe they're not. I mean, there's just no right or wrong answer. I think it's just making your decision with your eyes wide open and kind of knowing the differences.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great advice. What I can tell you from my own experience is, so I come from this from the perspective of somebody who does, you know, most things on my own. You know, I have my own social media accounts. I have my own blog. And I think what you need to do first is determine whether or not your firm has any sort of social media or, you know, alternative, if you will, branding policies. And, you know, usually they don't. You know, my firm didn't. And I just started my blog up and, you know, no one batted an eye. Some people found out about it and they were, you know, asked questions and, you know, they thought about, well, do we need an editorial policy for your blog and this and that? And then, you know, it's funny, Mark, and I so appreciate, you know, the opportunities I've been given at my firm, but, and it's funny because, you know, we have these, it seems like these conversations crop up about once a year where, you know, people will say, oh, you know, Dave has this blog, and what do we need to do with it? And then, you know, we talk for a little while, and then I don't hear again. And then another year passes by, and then we have sort of like the same conversation. And I think it's because I think at law firms, people, you know, of course, want to have some control, you know, the partners do, but at the same time, they understand that, you know, it actually benefits them a lot for me to write this blog. Right. Because I'm promoting, you know, a practice within the firm. I'm, you know, promoting myself. And, you know, what's the analogy? You know, all boats rise, right? Mm. You know, I'm, you know, rising. The profile of the firm goes up. The revenue will go up. You know, if I'm able to bring in clients from what I do. So I think it's hard even within a law firm, you know, when someone does that. But I think they. At least my firm, I think, really appreciates, you know, the time and effort that I put into it because, you know, certainly I brought in clients because of it. And I maintain, as you said, relationships with my contacts and that benefits the firm tremendously.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things I want to make sure we touched base on, David, was also talking about like results and kind of looking in the right places. And I think that's kind of a good transition, if that's okay with you, because I think one of the ways of making sure that the rest of the team is on board is them also understanding the why. You know, why does content marketing matter? And you know, where do we look to know if it's working? So I'd love to talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely.
Here's what I'll say, real short and simple. I think that more times than not, we look in the wrong places. We look at things like blogs and social media to create new clients on their own, right? So you might get into a staff meeting, David, and they go, how many clients have you gotten from that blog? And like that question alone should be a red flag because it's not truly reflective of all of the value a blog brings, right? When you say, I see this with websites too, like how much business do we get from the website? Well, wait a second. Don't referrals visit our website? Don't referral sources visit our website? Don't strategic partners visit our website? Right? That's like saying how many clients have we gotten from our business cards? You know? So although a website or a blog could bring in clients on its own through organic traffic, what we have found, and this is the key to the secret sauce, at least knowing if it's working, is that the best thing content marketing can do for you is make all other marketing work better. In other words, the biggest ROI from a blog or social media or a newsletter is in the other areas of marketing that it complements. Real quick examples. The more you stay in touch with people on social media and the more you stay in touch through email, you're going to see referrals go up. Referrals are a form of ROI on your networking activities and the relationships you're building. And we've actually found that there's a huge referral gap that most aren't aware of, where the average lawyer is only getting about 1/3 of the referrals that people are willing to give them. This is a study done by Texas Tech School of Business. You guys can look it up. So there's a huge opportunity there. But then conversely, that's networking, that's referrals, that's relationships. Conversely, somebody might come in through an advertising campaign, whether it be pay-per-click or something else. And along that journey, if they see your blogs, they see your videos, maybe they come across your social media presence. Maybe they don't become a client right away, but they get plugged into your email newsletter. Those things, the blogs, the videos, it's going to help that person want to move forward. And so what you find is that lead generation, that advertising activity actually performs better because the content helps that person convert. So one of the biggest places to look for content marketing to be working is to look at your existing marketing activities and see if those results get better. And unfortunately, and some people don't like this, but it's correlation, right? It's not, you know, who cares how many followers you have? Who cares how many likes a social media post gets? Look, I'll even be honest. We get tired of this at Spotlight Branding. We tell our clients it's the wrong thing to care about. Likes and followers don't put money in your pocket. We create content so that you get more referrals. We create content so that your other marketing works better. We create content so that you can demand higher rates because your content positions you as the expert. You know, so sorry that that was long-winded, but I think focusing, it's so easy to focus on the wrong places. And I really want to encourage everyone to kind of dig through the bull crap and really understand where the ROI is on content. It's related to all of your other marketing activities.
Well, Mark, I have a question because in that, you know, as you said, long-winded speech, you didn't mention search engine optimization, SEO. How does that play within what we're talking about here?
Well, what are your thoughts?
Well, I can tell you, I'm not a tech person, and I haven't, I mean, it's something you always hear about, okay? You always hear, well, you have to write blogs to so that Google picks you up. So you're, you know, you can be number one on Google, which I find, you know, as an individual lawyer at a larger firm, I'm not sure that I'm able to do that no matter what my SEO strategy is. And I'm not a tech person, so, you know, although in my blog, you know, platform, there's a spot for like tags and that sort of thing. And I can say I put tags in there, but I don't really know what it does. So tell me what you think about SEO.
Yeah, I mean, I think the short version is it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about, you know, success versus failure. And if your focus is search engines, you may succeed, you may not. And statistically, you're going to fail way more often than you succeed when your focus is search engine placement for a very simple reason, because not everyone can be number one on Google. You know, and you might say, oh, well, what about if it's a more specific search? Okay, still only one person can be number one, or only one firm can be number one for that search, and only one can be number two. And, you know, I mean, even environmental law, right? I mean, that's by no means is that I mean, there's plenty of people that do that, right, David? But it's also, it's more of a niche, right? There's probably a lot more people that do family law. You know, but I mean, let's just play this game real quick. I know you're in a bigger city, but how many lawyers do you think in Chicago do environmental law?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, environmental law, yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there are some smaller boutiques, there are some larger firms. I mean, probably, I don't know. This is just a random guess. 200, 250. May be more.
A smaller city, we could maybe, even if we divided that number by 10. At 25, right? 25 lawyers that do environmental law. So you say, oh, well, what if I write a blog that's really specific to, you know, I mean, you could fill in this blank better than I could, but something super specific about environmental law, right? Okay, well, 25 other lawyers could do the exact same thing. Google only shows like 7 to 10 results on page one, and no one really cares after like the third result. You know, so like the point is the math is against you when that's your focus. So what I tell people to kind of bring all this home is create content for people, not search engines. If it gives you some search engine results, that's icing on the cake. But if that's your focus, you're going to fail more than you succeed because the numbers are against you. Alternatively, if your focus is on how content can create more referrals, and how content can tap into your existing network better, and how it can make your existing marketing perform better, and how it can enable you to charge higher rates if your firm gives you control over that at all, or maybe bringing in more of the kinds of cases you want, that can succeed 100% of the time. There's literally nothing that can prevent that from working other than not putting in the work. Right. If Spotlight Branding, if we send your email newsletter out to 12 people, it's not going to accomplish a whole lot. Right. But I can assure you, if the content is on point and you're out there networking and growing your network, your newsletter will create more referrals. Just will. You know, so I also think the percentages are in your favor when you're focused on your existing marketing and network and improving your results from that. Versus chasing search engines. The math is just really against you there. And by the way, the reason no one talks about this is because the large majority of internet marketing companies focus on SEO because it's the golden goose and they can charge a ton for it. and they don't have to convince you to sign up for it. And I'm not saying they're all a bunch of crooks. I know them. They're good people. They have good intentions. But I don't know if they don't see it or they just won't admit it. But everyone's going to chase it, and it's mathematically impossible for everyone to succeed.
Well, what I can tell you is what I hear you saying, and it's I don't know if you're familiar with Grant Cardone. He's one of my, some people don't like. Yeah, he is. He's from Miami.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where he originally from Louisiana and now is in Miami. But he always says that the difference between a contact and a contract is the R, which is the relationship. And I always tell my folks that, you know, it's the business relationship that you have with people is what is the thing you have to worry about the most. And what I loved about this conversation, Mark, is that, you know, you brought to our my listeners how to take your content and build that and use that to help build the relationship. And I think that that's really what, to me, what makes Spotlight Branding's approach unique to what others I've seen in the industry.
And, you know, and I'm guessing we're going to wrap up shortly due to time, but let me leave them with one thing. Because the only thing we didn't mention is like the actual, the subject matter of the content. And I think that, you know, the last thing I want to mention is that keep it simple. Don't try to create your content, whether it's videos or blogs, for like a law school textbook. You know, believe it or not, what will make you seem like an expert to the majority of your audience is simplicity. Is, you know, three tips for making the divorce process smooth on the kids. It's not about how much case law you can quote. It's not about using words like precedents. Even the lawyers that you get referrals from probably aren't even going to really read it. And even if they did, they probably aren't even doing it. So even if they wish you put more case law in there, I promise you, you don't need to. And if you do, it's going to make it a really terrible read for a lot of other people. So believe it or not, here's kind of the paradox, if you will, of content marketing for lawyers. The less like a lawyer you are in your writing, the less academic you are, the more it works, right? You know, what are the common questions you get every day? Blog about that. What are the common situations your clients are in? Give them the 10,000 foot view advice or guidance to those situations. You don't have to get super specific to the law, to precedents. You're not writing for a law school textbook. So keep it simple, keep it short, keep it to the point. And what you'll find is that that actually really builds way more credibility than you could ever imagine.
Fascinating. Well, we are going to wrap it up. And but if people wanted to reach out to you, Mark, or to your company, not only you know, to ask questions, but also, you know, to potentially see if they can work, you know, with your company. What's the best way for folks to reach out to you?
Yeah. So if you want to talk more to Spotlight Branding about having this be done for you, just go to spotlightbranding.com, fill out the contact form. You'll get a link to schedule a call. It's really simple. It's a no pressure call. It's going to be kind of, you know, hey, you know, what do you need to know about us? You know, so just go to our website, spotlightbranding.com. But there's something I do want your audience to be aware of. Right now, we are still giving away free copies of our book that we put out recently. It's called The Ultimate Solo Lawyer's Guide to More Referrals and Better Clients. Don't be fooled by that word solo. A lot of the tactics still apply, even if you're an associate, as we talked about today. Right now on our website, you can still claim a free copy of that book. I don't know that we'll be doing that. I don't know how much longer we'll be doing that, but you can get a free copy of the book. It's right there on our homepage. If you scroll down just a couple inches, you can't miss it. So spotlightbranding.com, look for the book. It's free for now. And go to our contact page if you want to talk to us.
Perfect. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being on the show and for, you know, providing tips to my listeners.
Yeah, it was a blast. I hope it was helpful.
Thank you so much for listening in. You can join the discussion by leaving me a voicemail by going to anchor.fm/attorneydsy and hitting that message button.
You can leave me a comment for me to play on the show or a question for me to answer. You could also leave me a comment or question on social media. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at AttorneyDSY. I'm also on LinkedIn on my personal profile, so let me know if you have any comments about this episode. Tell me what you think about this podcast or give me a topic you'd like to hear about. This podcast is on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, TuneIn, and Anchor, so please be sure to subscribe and rate and review. I also want to invite you to the next session of the Lawyer's Emotional Intelligence Book Club. We're continuing on with Dr. Chatterjee's book, The Stress Solution. The next session will be tonight, July 7th at 7 p.m. Central. My special guest is Laurel O'Sullivan, and we're going to be talking about how to embrace nature and how going out into nature will help de-stress us. You can find out more by going to facebook.com/lawyersEQ. Have a great day or night, and remember to fight for the lifestyle that you want and become the rainmaker that you need to be.